This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Hi there, I'm Yom, host of Item 13, an African food podcast. I'm excited to be joining the Heritage Radio Network this year as we kick off our fourth season of the podcast. On Item 13, we cover all aspects of the African food ecosystem. You'll hear West Africans squabble over who has the best jollof. Newsflash, it's Ghana.
It's time to celebrate our jollof. Like, we are done with comparing who and who did what. Yeah. And jollof is not just about even the rice, it's about the protein that goes with it.
Guests share their expertise on African food ingredients and spices.
This is a region where, you know, even if you look at 18th century maps, you know, you had something called the Pepper Coast. Fresh and aromatic peppers, that is what distinguishes West Africa.
Tips on marketing food businesses.
A good way to engage your audience is to take them on that journey. You know, get them talking about this idea you have. That way you're engaging them, they're engaging with each other, and you're getting useful insights that you can then pull from and use to develop your recipe.
This season, my goal is to focus on more stories outside of English-speaking West Africa. So you'll hear stories from Benin, from Uganda, Liberia, and even Haiti. You'll also hear us discuss the impact of the Black Lives Matter movement and how COVID-19 has impacted some of the businesses featured on the show. You can catch up now on previous episodes of Item 13, wherever you listen to podcasts, and join us this season as we debut on HRN. Thank you.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that sin. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
My name is Souther Teague.
And I'm Greg Benson.
Guys.
But, yeah. Good morning.
Today is September 30th, 2020.
Yeah.
A day and, which will live in infamy.
An infamy.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Oh. Oh, man. The puns are back. Yeah. So yesterday, I guess yesterday's the day that I'll live in the infamy. Today, we'll live in the infamy. Yeah. the debates, presidential debates last night between incumbent President Trump and Joe Biden were quite a spectacle, I think, for us. And, you know, I know that all of us on this call have friends all over the world. I've been getting messages from people all over the world saying things like, what an embarrassment, what a joke. Like, the entire world is kind of laughing at everything that's going on in our country, you know, laughing sorrowful laughs, right? They're sad for us because we can't seem to get our shit together.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, I tell the story all the time when we had Steffi Shen from Dead Rabbit in Ireland on this summer. When, you know, I mean, when the, I think it was around July, when, you know, there was all of the BLM unrest and cases were on the rise again, and we thought we had it beat, and then things started taking off in Texas and Arizona, and it was just, you felt like you were living in a blender. And I remember we asked her before the show, I was like, I just need some perspective here. Like, does it look as insane on the outside as it feels on the inside? And she was like, oh yeah, no, it looks crazy from out here. I was like, good, because we're so just hammered by it psychologically every day that you start to wonder, it's like, is this, you start to almost gaslight yourself and be like, is this normal? You know, it's helpful to talk to people looking at it and have them give the perspective to be like, no, it's not.
Yeah, I think, Greg, you've sort of hit the nail on the head. Normal. That's the problem. As Americans, we have somehow normalized it and decided to simply work around it instead of facing it and overcoming it like every other country in the world has done or is doing. You know, and I think that that's the difference. We're sort of mired in it, and, you know, life has not been as obstructed for us as it was in many countries that really clamped down and shut down and held people accountable for, you know, not going even 2 kilometers from their own home when they were out for a jog. as we heard off air a little bit a moment ago, you know, we never really had that here. So I think we just sort of normalized it. Oh, well, I guess we have to wear a mask now. I guess we have to eat outside now. You know, like we just kind of kept on trucking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, we were also talking about this off air that we had a real, a truly sad and one that really kind of, you know, hit me right in the feels when I read about it. We had a casualty in the bar industry when Nightcap, amazing bar here in New York City run by a friend of the show, Natasha David, they announced that they were closing permanently this week. And it's just, you know, it made me realize, because, you know, they were doing well. They were profitable last year. There was no reason that they, if the virus hadn't hit, that anything, that they wouldn't have stopped, just kept going up and up and up. And, you know, I got this real sinking feeling realizing it, that like this will not be the first place like this that I read. It was one of the first ones. It will not be the last place like that that we read about before this year is over, you know?
Of course not.
And that's going to become normal too, which sucks.
We're already seeing them, you know? X-Con was a pretty important bar, existing conditions. And, you know, they had to pull the plug. A place like Nightcap, which went through some struggles having to move locations early in their go. And, you know, even the building that they moved into needed a lot of tender, loving care, as they mentioned in the article where they, you know, sort of showed us their tender underside and how they had to deal with facing letting it all go. I think it was a bar that had some importance already, but that was on its way to being a very important bar in sort of our, you know, it's our bubble, of course, but like they were an important place already. And I think they were going to go on to become even more important to the sort of landscape. And now they've been removed and, you know, none of us are safe from that. I think it's a harsh reality when we see these places that we know and love stumble and fall and go away, because we know that, you know, there but for the grace of God go I, right? Like, you know, I've shuttered all but one of my places, and, you know, we're struggling to hang on. It's, you know, it's terrifying.
It is. Yeah. I mean, I will say this, though, about Natasha David. This is not the last we're going to hear from her.
Oh, of course not. You know what
I mean? Oh,
of course
yeah.
not. She's poised to be a titan, you know? She's got all Absolutely. all the right mechanics and all the right pieces. This is going to just be a footnote in her history, but to live it at this moment, it's a big deal.
Did you, Souther, when there was for a brief moment in history, you worked with me at Prime Meats.
I did.
And was Natasha working there at the same time, or?
No, that was it was me and you and Karen Fu and I don't think she was there, or if she was, I never crossed paths.
She may have already come and gone.
I believe so, yeah.
I was, you know, that was an amazing place to work with a lot of amazing bartenders. I was the one who probably should have never worked there, having worked with all of you guys. But yeah, I mean, she's an amazing person. So is Lauren Corvo, you know, like they're powerhouse. They're going to come out with something. And it's, you know, as amazing as Nightcap has been, it's going to blow it out of the water, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, you know, it all comes down, sadly, you know, according to the article and according to everything that I've heard from her directly, you know, it all really came down to landlord issues, which are, you know, the major, obviously, expense that a bar, restaurant, or any business has in New York City or anywhere. And they simply weren't willing to negotiate. And in fact, right. There was a moment where they thought they were going to be on the hook for the remaining 6 years of the lease. But there's something called a good guy clause where they're only liable for the next 3 months, I think is what they said. But, you know, that totals close to $90K. So they're going to do a bunch of pop-ups, according to the article that was in Punch. They're going to do some pop-ups and try and raise some money to, you know, take care of that bill that's looming over them. And, you know, of course, we wish them all the best and we'll support them in any way we can. And we know for sure that this isn't the last we've heard of them.
Oh, yeah.
For
sure. But in the meantime, get your Nightcap coffee mugs, folks. They're
an
attractive addition to any home.
I'll put Greg and I'll put in the notes somewhere where you can go to support them. I'm sure they've got a website. And yes, they've got some merch. If you're out of town, they've got some other items that you can do to go to the pop-ups if you're living here in town. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, politics is depressing. The state of the industry is depressing. But you know what isn't depressing, guys? Rum. And... And fortunately, to talk about that, we're very lucky to have in the virtual studio with us today, Delphine Gardere, the CEO of Rum Barbancourt, coming to us live from Haiti. Hey, Delphine, how are you?
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm good. I'm doing good. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you so much for coming on. Welcome. So we've bummed ourselves out. So now we need to talk about rum to cheer ourselves up again.
Right. We need our spirits lifted with some delicious spirits from Haiti.
Awesome.
Well, so first of all, we were talking about this a little bit off air, but what is life like in Haiti these days, and what has life been like for you leading up to this? Because you had a kind of an interesting beginning to the pandemic, if I'm not mistaken. I think interesting is an understated way of putting it.
Interesting is understated. I was pregnant during the beginning of the pandemic, so it was kind of a rough patch for me on a personal level, I'd have to say, because being pregnant during Corona and being stuck in Europe at that time was not a pleasant surprise.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I can't imagine. You were in France, is that right?
Yes. But luckily everything went well, and I'm back in Haiti, and we're all good.
That's great. And this is, you know, I mean, I'm sure during the pandemic, it was a lot different than it has been. But you've sort of been especially in the early stages of your career, no stranger to bouncing back and forth between Europe and Haiti, where you grew up. Is that correct?
Absolutely not. I lived in the U.S. a bit. I lived in France, and I lived in the U.K. and Haiti, of course.
Yeah.
So I just sort of want to get the origin story a little bit. What was that like kind of growing up around the Rum Barbancourt business? Because, you know, I'm a big fan, and your father was running the company when you were a kid. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Funnily enough, I think I didn't really understand what it meant at the time, because my father was someone who was very discreet and quite humble. So I never really understood the power of the family company and its legacy until the last, I would say, until I grew up to become 20 or so.
Yeah, well, I think that's kind of a typical little kid thing, though, is you sort of
totally
tend to, whatever, you know, your dad could be Neil Armstrong. And if you're, you know, a 4-year-old, you're like, what, your dad didn't go to the moon for work last week?
Yeah,
yes,
yeah, right.
Exactly.
It's normal. It's totally normal.
Yeah.
So when did it sort of, I love that you kind of talk about the power that it has. Sort of describe to me a little bit how that gradually dawned on you as you kind of grew up, and what that sort of means to you now.
I think I realized this when I was working in investment banking in London, and then I came back to Haiti during a break, and I realized I went to business school because I love consumer products. Here we have this amazing family business. Why am I working investment banking? I should refocus and recenter on what I love. And it's such an amazing opportunity to be able also to participate in the family business directly or indirectly.
Sure. I mean, reading from your bio here, I see that, you know, you're focusing your attention on the family business and the fact that it's a, you know, kind of a luxury brand. But you worked in luxury brands before this, right?
Absolutely.
And you saw like there was an easy tie-in for something like you worked for, it looks like a perfumery, right? So you're selling or at least promoting perfumes all over the world, which are definitely a luxury item. And then you saw an opportunity to go back home, literally go back to your home, but also to go back and promote something that you had a little bit more of a personal tie to.
Absolutely. I worked in the fragrance business, working with big brands, advertising and doing marketing, mainly marketing, launching new products, managing brands, managing their budgets in either the UK, Ireland, as well as France. So I think there's definitely a tie-in with Barbancourt. What struck me the most was when I went down to Grasse and I visited one of the big extractors of essential oils. And it was so interesting to see that the way they distill and the way they produce essential oil is quite interlinked to how you produce rum. And the infrastructures are similar. I would not say the same, but they are similar. And also the universe of the smell and the nose of the fragrance, but also when you're taking on the nose of the rum, or when you're in the lab looking at testing out different products to see how it translates to the consumer. It's interesting.
I just want, for our listeners out there, I love that Souther doesn't know much about this whole world, but you were the senior brand manager for Hermès, so that's not a small thing. That's like kind of a big deal. So I don't want to just like kind of gloss over that part of it. That's pretty baller, okay? So we got to.
Is that a big deal? Should I have known that?
Yeah, man.
I try to downsize it.
Well, I'm the one that's going to bring that to the foreground for this conversation.
I mean, this is why we have, you know, the three of us, so we can have different perspectives. I don't know. Exactly. I don't even know what that is. Is that a perfume?
It's a very, very high-end luxury clothing brand, and it as well as, yeah, many other things.
Yes.
Well, I got it.
Like, awesome. For instance, Souther, the newest iPhone, or sorry, the newest Apple Watch, there's an Hermès version of it with leather bracelet band. It's struts. kind of a big deal.
It is.
I imagine you've already ordered yours, Damon. I'm sure it's on the way.
Yeah, it's on the way. I just have to, as soon as the show starts paying after, you know, 400 episodes, maybe
I can afford one. That royalty check's being cut right now. Patrick, you listening?
But anyway, sorry, Delphine, I just had to throw that in there.
It's okay.
All right, so I mean, I'm already in awe. I already think you're a big deal. You're running Barbancourt. That's a big deal to me. I don't know from Hermès, but
thank
great. Either way, what you're describing here is that there's obvious parallels between these two consumer products that are on the global market, and you have a lot of training that kind of positioned you in exactly the right way to, again, I think you got fortunate in that all of these things led up to you traveling the world and getting all this education and working for these amazing brands all over the world, got you to a place where you could say, now I can go home.
Yes, absolutely. So in 2015, I started discussing with my dad, and he was like, what are your plans for Haiti? And I thought, well, you know, I've always been open to coming home. So I will start getting involved if this is what you're asking. So I started getting involved as their export distribution manager. And and now I'm managing the business.
And I'm sorry, what year was that you said?
2015.
So, you know, just a 5-year run, starting in that position, and your title now is you're the
managing director. Yeah.
Managing director,
or CEO,
of the whole
company. If you want.
Pretty amazing. Again, that you got to do so much travel, gather so much education, and then take it all home. You know, that's the true story of, you know, hometown hero does good. You know, prodigal daughter comes back.
But I think it's essential in a country like Haiti. If we do not have people who come back and bring back experience, how is the country going to develop and improve? And even for the family business, I think it's good to bring new ideas.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I can attest to this. You know, I'm from a very small town in Oklahoma. I know that growing up in Lone Wolf, Oklahoma. I know that growing up in a small town, like in a farm. It's the best name ever. But, you know, in small towns and farming communities, especially, they see all the kids grow up and they move away, go to college, like what you did, but then they typically don't return. And that's what kind of, you know, over time leads to the kind of downfall and demise of a lot of these smaller communities. We've talked with a lot of people from, you know, Venezuela and parts of Mexico and South America, and you know, the cool thing is that we hear we're starting to hear a little bit more about people who've done exactly what you've done, where they've moved away, kind of like cut their teeth in different industries, gone to school in different countries, and then come back and bring all that education back and continue to help their homeland survive and actually thrive, which is a really amazing thing to do. So,
yes.
I mean, I really applaud
your move on that. Kudos to that. It is a story we've heard over and over with other, you know, other brands of spirit too. You know, definitely like Mezcal has this problem. The kids grow up and they get to see something beyond their little village, and then they don't go back because, you know, it doesn't seem to have value to them unless they have some sort of emotional tie towards the business itself that makes them want to go back and you know, again, do good for the town, do good for the community and the family.
And as we all know, kids are emotionless. So,
yeah. Well, this seems like a good stopping point to take a quick break and hear from our sponsors here on Heritage Radio Network. We're going to come right back and keep talking rum barbancourt and what it means for the island of Haiti in general. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's, the pizza restaurant, is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. And of course, there's the 2 Michelin-starred Blanca tucked away in the garden for truly daring diners. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City and now in Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Welcome back to the Speakeasy. We're talking to Delphine Gardier from Rum Barbancourt. We were just about to start talking about the importance of the rum itself to the nation of Haiti. But off the air, we started talking about how maybe our listeners could use just a little bit of a 101 intro to what's going on with Rum Barbancourt, the star system, how that ties back to Cognac in France. And you said you had some insights for us and our listeners. So take it away.
So basically, Barbancourt was founded by Dupré Barbancourt, who had strong ties to the Cognac region and basically decided to do rum in a cognac-like manner. So we basically use French oak for aging. And the star system on the bottle is kind of like what they used to do for cognac in the early 20th century. So, for instance, the 3-star was the equivalent at the time of the VS in cognac, and the 5-star would have been the XO at the time. So that was a way of classifying the aging at the time. I don't know if that's clear.
Yeah, absolutely. Pretty straightforward. Talk to us a little bit about how the importance of a brand like Barbancourt and what it means to Haiti in general.
So Barbancourt is the iconic brand of Haiti. We're probably one of the biggest branded exporters because we do export a lot of things. But in terms of branding, we're the number one branded export for the country. We employ 500 people and we work with about 3,000 farmers yearly. In a co-op manner, so we don't really have our fields. We have a bit of fields, but 80% of the sugarcane is sourced directly from the farmers. So that's a big, big role in the agricultural sector that we play. And we also, so we accompany the farmers kind of like in France with the champagne. We helped the farmers not only grow sugarcane crops, but also help them develop other crops, such as beans, for instance, which is a staple in the Haitian food industry.
So there's like like kind of a négociant situation similar to France, like with the, like you said, you mentioned champagne and how you would have the négociant kind of talk with the farms, with the wineries and the vintners. So there's, you're yes. very much working tied in with the surrounding community.
Basically, yeah. Yes. So agriculturally, we have an entire department that basically just takes care of them. And also helps educate them as well, and offer them the support. Sometimes they need help with labor, they need help buying materials and things like that for the crops. So we help them with that. And we also help educate on varieties of sugarcane. We've been doing research on different varieties as well, as to help them get, how do I say that, a better return on investment.
Better crop yields, so they can...
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's incredible. I'm sure that works in concert, that works in a positive direction for both you and the farmers, right?
Exactly, because the better the yield, the better we can put the prices up as well, and it helps them... have a better quality of life. Also, what we've now do, what we've been doing is pegging to the dollar. So most of the people we pay are now pegged. The local currency is now pegged to the dollar. Let's put it that way.
Gotcha.
So what is? Can you talk a little bit about pegging to the dollar? What exactly that it sounds like, you know, that it would mean, you know, whatever price this fetches in U.S. dollars is what the folks that make the raw materials and you know, produce the sugarcane for the distillery get paid, instead of being subject to some other market fluctuations by some other currency. But I am not an economist, so that is kind of what I got out of that.
Simply put, it is that we have a devaluating currency. So let's say that in 2017, we were at 70 gourds for $1. And then now we were at 120 to a dollar.
Wow.
So we've just pegged it so that they keep the same quality of life and quality of life. And as the gourd depreciates, they still have more buying power, basically.
Yeah.
Because everything is priced in goods. Everything has to be priced locally in goods.
Wow, you know, they dropped almost half.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Crazy.
You know, you'd be hard pressed to find a brand that doesn't say in its outward facing publicity stuff that, you know, it's like, we, you know, give back to the communities that we come from, and we, you know, we really value the people that grow the sesame seeds that go on top of your Big Macs or whatever, you know. But it's really cool hearing you talk about this and kind of realizing that, you know, you get a sense of what you were talking about at the top of the show, of that the power that this rum has and how kind of tied in with your home it is, by dint of the fact that you have gone out of your way to make sure that this rum, this brand, this company that's been a part of your life since you were a little kid, is working to bring up the people around you. And I think that's awesome.
Well, I think what I understood from my father is that everyone is at the core of the process. There's no bourbon court without the employees, and that's it. Without the employees, without the farmers, it's a process. So we need to work together as a family, and a lot of them think of themselves as family, to be honest.
I think we talk often about sustainability of products. We talk about, you know, the actual agricultural aspect of things being sustainable, and you know, using best practices to make that true. But I think it extends, of course, into the families that are producing these things. If you don't create a relationship with them that offers them a stable and sustainable life, then you know that relationship's going to fall apart, and you're not going to get what you need, and nor are they, right? So it all seems to me it falls into the bubble of sustainability.
Absolutely. And we have employees that have been with us for 10, 15 years. We're really focused on that and focused on longevity. This is really something important to us, is when someone comes in, they need to feel like they're part of the family.
Sure. You know, part of something that's bigger than themselves, but that needs them to operate.
Exactly.
And speaking of things like that, you in the notes here, I see that you wanted to kind of touch on what it's like to be running such a large spirits brand while embodying female empowerment. Can you give us a little bit of insight on what you mean when you said that?
Well, I'm actually the second female generation running the show. The first one was early 1920s, who was Dupré's wife. So her name was Natalie. And my middle name is Natalie, so that's inspired from her. And she was known to be quite fierce and involved in different types of revolutions. And I think she was ahead of her time in female empowerment, let's put it that way. And as a mom of two daughters, and in Haiti, where business is often male dominated, I want to help other women grow with me, if that makes sense, in their career. And we've done a lot in implementing women in key positions of the company. My CFO is a woman, and now even in some different areas of the companies where you would not necessarily think there would be women, there are some now today.
Well, that's great. And we had a couple weeks on the show, we had Dr. Nicola Nice of Pomp and Whimsy on. And one of the things that, you know, I was really struck by in that conversation and in talking to her is just this notion that there are so many spirits brands out there that pitch themselves as like doodly, you know, brands for mega dudes that, I don't know, drink whiskey on the beach at 3 in the morning. Yeah, dude bros, exactly. And when you do that, you're cutting out 51% of the human population from
Absolutely.
Your marketing material.
Yeah.
And how just by, you know, bringing women into these decision-making processes and into, you know, I'm not just talking about focus groups. I'm talking about like making them your CFO. You're going to really take your brand in a direction where it appeals to everybody, which I think we can all agree is good from just a humanistic and from, I'm sure, a financial standpoint too.
But also in terms of product development, I think sometimes in the alcohol, in the beverage industry, let's put it that way, women are not always seen as major consumers. But when you look at the cocktail trends and even rum today, there's more and more women drinking. So it's not a good idea to cut them out.
Absolutely. Our perception is vastly different from the reality of the data, which, again, Dr. Nice pointed out to us a couple weeks ago when she said,
I think it was last week.
Are you sure that wasn't like 4 years ago?
Wasn't yesterday March 15th? You're right. It was last week. When she said, I think all of us on the air were stunned when she told us that the statistics dictate that one in three women prefers a spirituous cocktail over beer and wine, whereas one in four men, so 33% versus 25%. So that was a shocking number for me to hear, because I think, again, my own personal perception was that, you know, dude bros like to sit down and slug back, you know, spirits. The women like to drink wine. But like, obviously, just because that's what I think and that's what I perceive, the data dictates that that's incorrect. So are you doing anything? So you're doing things to put put females in positions of prestige and power within the business. Are you then, in fact, doing any marketing that leans more towards women than men, or at least equalizes it better than maybe some other companies are doing?
I think marketing-wise, we are staying quite institutional for the moment. We do have a flavored rum, which is called Pango, and it does lean more towards women than men in terms of consumption. However, I think in the future, women in business and in product development, there's always a feminine touch in developing products and in the complexity of products that I'd say some of the subtleness that women see that maybe a guy would not see in developing products. So watch this space.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at just even in United States history, I mean, it was fairly recently, there were still some places in the United States where women were not allowed in certain bars, and still some clubs. And like, as far as like private clubs and stuff like that go, I mean, you know, I think a lot of it basically just comes down to men do not understand women at all. and women like are just understand everything. Women are way smarter than men. Let's just put it that way. I really fully believe that. And mm-hmm. I think that as far as like any kind of marketing goes, it's almost as if like anything that's like any kind of like marketing is modeled towards women, it's always been by men who do not understand women. Whereas that women in charge of marketing pretty much make it even across the board, because they're just smarter and they can hit the entire audience rather with something of quality rather than some dude who invented what was it called? Cougar juice? What Dr. Nice was talking about?
Oh, yeah. Cougar juice.
Like, shit like that. That's, like, a perfect example of, like, men not understanding women as consumers.
Clearly. In this industry. He was not in the female mind when he came up with the name.
Exactly. It's shocking. It's incredible. So, what's cool, what we're seeing a lot more of these days is, I mean, if you look at everything, especially a lot of the people that we've talked to on this show, females in the position of marketing and production of newer spirits and even old spirits like Barbancourt, you know, like there's more of an air of like this very classic, timeless vibe that is really refreshing in a way that's not, you know, like Beefeater Pink Gin or Cougar Juice or whatever it's called. It's a very mature, very thoughtful, like across the board, everything I've seen is very extremely thoughtful. Like Yola Mezcal is one that I always think of, you know?
I think as a woman, when I look at the brand, I would never go away from the DNA of the brand, which is, you know, the cognac heritage, right. The authenticity of it being 100%, you know, Haitian rum, and the light body flavor of Barbancourt. But you can add some subtlety or subtleness to it, and new products as well that might go back in time with the roots of the product and the brand. Like pot still and things like that.
Yeah, definitely. Like, yeah. I think it's probably the rum that I go to more frequently than any other rum, to be honest. I mean, like, I love like really funky agricoles. Even another product of Haiti, I love Clarin, you know? It's some really crazy stuff.
White overproof.
Yeah. I love rum. I've been quoted many times saying that rum is extremely outlaw because you can make it anywhere and there are kind of no rules. Or like there's just a lot of different ways to do it. But Barbancourt's always been like my top go-to, because again, you know, there's something, the usefulness of it, the way that the flavor works in cocktails, obviously in the cocktail bar owner, but yes. I'm also a sipping rum drinker, you know, and to me, it's like you said before, like pot still and kind of like a lighter body. To me, that's what I want to sip on. You know, I love like really thick molassesy, bold, like Solera aged rums. But, you know, like Barbancourt's always been my go-to. I mean, while we're talking about this, what's your go-to? Like, do you drink in cocktails? You drink straight?
I
mean, like,
I drink a bit of everything. But my favorite, I'm going to say my favorite cocktail by far is a rum sour with fresh lime. So fresh lime and bitter. And I actually put aged rum. So I'll put the 3-star in it. And actually, that is a cocktail that has been going on in my family for generations. Because my grandmother was from a family of 9 kids. And they used to have, they used to have happy hour at my grandparents' house almost 2 or 3 times a week, I'd say, with the entire family coming over. And so I grew up around a lot of rum sours. So that's by far my favorite cocktail. And but I can also drink Barbancourt on ice anytime.
Yeah, I agree. I'm a rum old fashioned guy.
Same.
I'll love rum old fashions.
I'll start with the rum sour and then I'll finish with a Barbancourt with ice.
Yeah,
nice.
So talk to us a little bit about where Barbancourt is going. What do you see as the future for Barbancourt and Haiti in general?
We want to be, I think, part, we're going to continue doing the sustainability aspect of the company, continue building that. So we already have a team there, but we're reinforcing it, if that makes sense. We are also looking at new product developments, like bringing back pot still, and looking at maybe new products with this. And a pot still gives a different aromatic complex to the products. So that will be an interesting pipeline to go through.
Sure. So in a small way, looking forward to the pot still is actually looking backwards.
Exactly.
Yeah, sort of reclaiming the heritage.
Exactly. Sometimes you have to look backwards to move forward. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, very much.
And, makes perfect sense. And yeah.
That's how I drive.
Stay off the roads, Damon.
I hope not many Barbancours drink responsibly.
Well, I mean, have you ever ridden a motorcycle backwards?
So I think that's what we're looking at for now. That's one of the big projects that we're looking at for now.
I mean, that's outstanding. Very cool. And we all await that with bated breath. We're always excited to see a new product coming out of Barbancourt. If anyone wanted to get in touch with you or the brand, I guess would be the better way to go about it. You got a social media handle that you want to share with us? Or
yes, we have a Barbancourt page USA and a Barbancourt page for Haiti. And my marketing manager is constantly on it. So she takes care of everything. Or if you have any specific questions towards the brand, there's marketing@barbancourt.com.
Easy enough. Direct access.
Exactly.
Very cool.
Wow. It's been a delight having you on. Thank you so much for taking the time and sitting down with us from Haiti.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, I hope everything's going okay down there, as we're still slogging through it here in New York City anyway. And Damon's had other fires to put out, literally.
Yeah, California.
Thank you so much for having me.
I really want to say thank you to you, you know, personally. It, from the first bar that I ever started running, when I first started getting into bar management, and I was a buyer and in charge of, you know, all the fun stuff to, you know, to get put behind the bar. Barbon Court was like the first, one of the first, but it was literally, it was, you know, Rittenhouse Rye, Laird's Bonded, and Barbon Court. Those were like the three things,
awesome.
The first, in no particular order, but those were definitely the first three bottles I put on the back bar. And awesome. So I just want to say thank
Iconic.
You so much.
Thank you. It,
yeah, exactly. Exactly. So thank you for that.
Thank you so awesome. Much.
Well, that's it for the Speakeasy this week. Be sure to check out Rum Barbon Court. It's one of our favorites, as I just said. And check out heritageradionetwork.org for many more programs like this one. Click on the beating heart to donate to the station to keep us going. And until next time we see each other or chat via the internet.
Yeah.
Cheers, everyone.
Hey, cheers everybody. Everybody. I just want to point out real quick before we go, you know, tune in next week. It's our 400th episode
right.
of the Speakeasy. We've got a great episode coming up for you with some great guests. So please tune in to the 400th episode next week. Thank you so much for everything, guys. I can't believe that we made it this far.
Seriously.
Me neither.
Yeah.
I can't awesome. Believe you guys still let me do this every week. This is great.
I can't believe they let me do it for almost 10 years now.
Yeah, right? All right, guys. Cheers. Thank you so much.
Cheers, everyone.
Cheers, everyone.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some.
The Speakeasy is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to the Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork.
Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows that you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.